here. It's called what? Walking with Jesus. We're looking at the life of Jesus Christ, his life and also his ministry. Most of us are familiar with his ministry, and we don't know that much out about his life outside the fact he was born in what city? There we go. We had to think about Christmas a little bit. Bethlehem, and then he grew up in what city? Nazareth. That's kind of what most people know. We covered all of that last year in a three-month series. So what we're going to see on the screen is simply a chart that helps. I know we've got a lot of new people here and people that haven't been here in a few weeks. Before we look at the chart, if you could think of where that wall is right there and the wall there where the handrail is, and if I were to take markers and I were to put 184 markers across this platform, can you visualize that? Okay, 184. When we take the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, lay them out in a chronological format. In other words, what happened first, what happened second, all the way to the very end. That is what exactly you would see in the Bible or in the New Testament, the four Gospels. 184 events. So if we go from there to here, this is about halfway. If we're looking at halfway of 194 would be what? Math majors? Springfield, let me guess. It would be 90. Come on, people. Surely you went to school. 90, 184 divided by 2 is? Maple Valley. 92. Okay. That would be halfway. We are currently right about here when we look at all of last year and look at what we've done so far this summer. We're at number 45, was just about, what, one quarter of the way through the life and the ministry of Jesus. That's why it takes 3 months every year for a number of years to really look at what it was that Jesus did in terms of living his life, but also then gathering a team of individuals together, training them to then carry on his ministry once he was gone. So we're about here today, and when we end up this summer, we're going to be about here. Okay? Come next year, we'll pick it up in the summer for 3 more months. Why are we doing this? Because the Bible simply tells us, if you're going to be a Christian, if you're going to call yourself a Christian, if you're in Christ, then you must walk as he walked. In other words, live your life like he did. You can't live your life like he did if you don't understand what? His life and his ministry. That's why we're going through with it and spending so much time looking at the life and ministry of Jesus. Because we are all supposed to live like him. We're to do exactly what he did. He didn't just come to die for the sins of the world. He came to die for the sins of humanity so that we could put our faith in him. Then we could begin to live a life that honors God and also live a life to carry out the mission that he's entrusted to us. Otherwise, folks, let's be honest, we're just being religious. You're just going to church for whatever reason you go to church. We've got to take this serious because he's entrusted to us the very mission that his father gave him. He's entrusted that to us. So when we look at this, we divide his life and ministry into segments. And they're basically what we call five what? Five phases. Okay, we looked at all of this last year. This year, we're looking at this much right here. Now, Jesus lived for about 30 years. We don't know how old he was before he began his ministry. The Bible says about 30 years. Then half of his ministry, time-wise, was just in this phase here. It was a time we would call it ministry foundations, foundations of relationships. Now, how long does it take you to get to know somebody? Well, quite a while. Well, we see he spent half of his ministry time just building relationships with people. He primarily stayed away from the big cities, was out in the rural areas, if you will. He went to their homes. He introduced them to his family and was just a very low-key, casual time of relationship. And he called people to just follow him, come and see, In other words, get to know me. You can't ever have deep relationships unless you spend quality time in each other's life, in all aspects of each other's life. Today, we're continuing our study here of phase three, phase four. Phase three is a ministry training. He now has a group of individuals that he has called. He now says, follow me, I'll make you fishers of men. In other words, he ups the ante, if you will. If you're really going to be a Christian, you have to be trained to do ministry. Ministry is using your life to make a spiritual difference in the life of other people. It's that simple. He didn't save people just so they could go to church or so that they could stand at a kiosk and check people in or sing in a group up here. That's all well and good, but do you realize non-Christians can do those things? Yeah, he saved us for ministry. He wants you to make a spiritual difference in someone else. In your church, and where else? In your community, wherever you happen to be working, wherever you go to school, wherever you live, that's your community. And do something in those areas that will help people move closer to God. So as he trains them, he moves them into a time of what we would call outreach. He expands the sphere of influence. He says, okay, you guys have been with me now for well over 2 years. It's time for you to get serious about your faith. And let's go see the training that I've given you. Let's go see you put it into practice, okay? Now, we're starting school sports and all of that and all the surrounding communities, colleges, et cetera, pros, football and all of that. They have a period of training, don't they, called preseason. And you're trying to figure out not who knows the game, but who knows the game and can play the game and play it at a high level. That's exactly what Jesus is doing. That's what we've been studying this summer. And here we have lines, these very strong vertical lines, we call them. Jesus challenges them. It's as though they're in a room and he's built relationships, but they can't go any further till he calls them to be fishers of men. Then they move from phase two to phase three. Now we have a dotted line here. Why? Because he trains them. And if you can picture these, we've said this before, like this room, if all the doors are closed, he trains them and then he takes them out that door. You could picture that, can't you? I can take eight of you out that door. A month later, we'll come back to a period of training and we come in from a different location where we've been. Retrains them, debriefs them. Then they go out another door. 3 months later, they'll come in another door. Does that make sense? So you can picture what Jesus is doing is training them, taking them out, bringing them back, taking them out, bringing them back. The whole time they're developing proficiency in their faith. That is what we have been studying so far this summer. He's given them the knowledge, the attitudes, and the skills to be disciples who make what? Who make disciples. Remember, he said, follow me, I will make you. In other words, you can never be a disciple maker until you're trained. Are you with me? You need training. That's what we've been looking at. The easy way you can understand that, we said these two sides, there are two distinct phases, but if you were to take a coin out, there's two sides. If you have a coin with only one side, it's not a valid coin. Nobody will take it. So if you can think of these two phases being two sides of one coin, you can understand this. It makes us a valid disciple who makes disciples if we're trained and we're actually reaching out to others. You with me? Okay, it's not that complicated, just checking. In his effort to grow the disciples, Jesus uses normal areas of life. Okay, we all live life, but don't we all have a home or a place where we hang out? Yeah, most of us have a place of employment. Okay, that's an area of life. We all have extended family. True? We all have a peer group of friends. You see, that's the common areas of life, but no one person here has the same people in those areas that someone else does. He's using those areas of life to train them. He demonstrates to his disciples that everybody has needs. You see, they're just fishermen. Their world is very, very small. They have a house, and they have the Sea of Galilee, and every day they get up, they take their nets, get in the boat, they go out, throw their nets, bring fish in, clean the fish, wash their nets, and they go to sleep. You ever feel like that's how you live your life? It's called work, isn't it? Their scope of life was very, very small. Most of them had never been within maybe 70 miles of their home, and that's when they had to go down to Jerusalem and they had to actually go to the temple to worship. Other than that, they didn't know anybody. They didn't. The people in Capernaum where Jesus ended up didn't know the people in Nazareth. Why? It's 40 miles away. You say, well, it's not that far. Okay, 40 miles from here is where? It's not Battle Creek. Battle Creek's only 26 miles. Okay, you got to think, where's 40 miles from Nashville, if you will? Okay, do you know the people who live there? Not unless you work there or you went to school there, and even then you don't know all the people. So Jesus is stretching them out of their little fishing world into the pool, if you will, of humanity. And not only is he teaching them that everybody has needs. For example, he goes into a place where they have religious services. There's a demon-possessed person there. With his boys, he casts that person out. Lesson to you and I, even in a church, we have people dealing with severe problems. True? We got people sitting here. It's all they can do to hold themselves together because of the grief they're going through or the trauma they've been through or what's facing them in the very near future. And we come here and we all go, like everything's good. Jesus is teaching his boys in the synagogue, there are people here who are messed up. Welcome to humanity, right? And he wants us as his followers to walk across the room and get to know people. Enter their space. Invite them into yours. If they don't want that, you've tried, correct? Nothing's, it just grinds me to see church people come into a church, sit on their blessed assurance, in the same chair, the same table, they get up and they leave, and they've never met one new person. That's just horrid. I'm not even sure that's religious. That's more selfish than it is religious. God has given us humanity to minister to care about, to love on, and also to receive that from others. That's why we sit around tables so you can get to know other people. That's why we have a room so you can walk across the room and get to know people. He takes them into a home where Simon Peter's mother-in-law is ill. And he shows them that in our homes and in the homes of our friends, there are people not doing so well. And you can either turn your face from them or say, I'll pray for you, but we never visit them, that we never invest in them. So he takes them to a church, we would say. He takes them into a home. And then last week we learned about the fact from, as Nick spoke, that the boys are back fishing. That's their job. They're in their workplace. In our workplaces, there are people who have needs. Would you agree? And we've got to care enough to challenge them, care enough to spend time with them. And by doing that, we do exactly what Jesus has asked us to do. We call those ministry experiences. It's on the job training. As they move from one place to another, he's saying, don't just stand there and look at people. Invest in their life. Get to know them. That's why we're in this series, to try to take churched people, which we all are, and get us to care enough to get into somebody else's life. We're going to be in Luke chapter 5, if you would turn there. He's not only showing them that they have needs, but he's showing them how to meet needs, how to build relationships, how to speak spiritual truth into a situation, how to actually care. So if we read these passages and not just read over them, but actually read them and mull them through our mind, we begin to go, oh, I see what Jesus did there. Maybe I should try doing the same thing. And you're going to learn five tips today, five principles from the life of Jesus. in which he made a significant difference in the life of another human being. He's not just doing that for himself. He's doing it for us. He's doing it for us so that we learn how to function like he did. We're in Luke chapter 5, and we're going to look at verse 12 and 13 today. Now, this is part of a little larger passage from verse 12 through verse 16. We're only looking at the first two verses because I only have today to do this. Here's the first two verses. While Jesus was in one of the what? What lives in towns? People. A man came along who was covered with leprosy. We'll talk all about this in a little bit. When he saw Jesus, the man with leprosy saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him. Have you ever been so troubled, so in a jam, so messed up that you had to beg for help? Some of us have. We've been there. What would drive a man to fall on his face, to get on his knees and beg for help? A lot of things. And I know most guys here are thinking, they're not going to say it, probably a woman. That's why we don't say it, guys. As we think of it, what would cause a person to do that? And there's a lot of words we could use. There's no right word. But see, when we read Scripture, we need to ask ourselves questions. Self, why would somebody beg? Lord, if you are willing. First thing out of his mouth is what word? Lord. When it says he fell with his face to the ground, in the original Greek language, when you do some study, you see that this is a term always associated with worship. Not only is he broken coming for help, he's coming to the only one that he thinks can help him. I think there's a lot of people here where in our lives we were broken, we were messed up, we had done stupid stuff, and we realized the problem was us. It wasn't, normally we're blaming everybody. It's the cop's fault that I got stopped. It's my wife's fault, it's my husband's fault, it's my mother-in-law. When you get to the point where you realize you're the problem, there's only one person that can help you, and it's not a counselor, it's not a pastor. It's who? It's God. And this man realizes this is Jesus. I've heard about this Jesus. He's done miracles. I've heard people talk about how great he is. He falls down in a position of worship. First word out of his mouth is, Lord, if you are willing. Now think about that. If you're willing, that may be because you've got a messed up concept of God, that God doesn't care about you, that God's a big bully, that God's in heaven, he's just laughing at you. If you're willing, no. Or it could be that you realize you are such a stinking mess, and or you've made such a stinking mess in your life that you think this, even God doesn't love me. Have you ever thought that? You got to be pretty broken to come to that point. He says, Lord, if you're willing. Now remember, he's fallen down in a position of worship. If this guy is who everybody said he is, the Messiah, the Son of God, then God can do whatever he wants. Even though I don't think he can. I don't think God can restore my marriage. I don't think God can help me kick this addiction. I don't think God can give me a job. I don't think that God can help my family. You ever thought that? You got to be pretty desperate for that. But then he ultimately says, you're my only hope. And if you can't do it, there's nobody who can. Jesus reached out his hand and he touched the man. What a great phrase here. I am. What does that mean in the Bible? That is God's Jewish name Jehovah. Now, in English, it's I am. And we go, okay, when we read it, it's understandable. I am. I'm just talking about me. No. He starts off identifying himself. Who is he? God is what? Willing. Isn't that nice? No matter how messed up you are or anything in your life, God is willing. And he goes on. He said, be clean. Now, I'll talk about leprosy here in a moment. And about 6 months later, after he went to multiple doctors and had paid all the deductibles, he was partially clean. What does it say? What's it say? How soon? Immediately. See, that's what God can do in our life. If we call out in honesty, I'm messed up, I need you, God can bring healing to your life. Okay, you can go home now. That's the gist of the message, folks. Do you understand that? God loves you. God wants to help you, but he can't help you until you recognize the fact that you need help. We've talked about three different ministry experiences so far: in the church, in a home, and in the business place. Here's our fourth ministry experience. Jesus allows his disciples to be near him, to observe, to watch, to listen to what's going on here. And he shows his boys how to deal with what our culture calls marginalized people. Have you ever heard that term? Marginalized. Think about it. Some of you have not heard that term. The word marginalized in relationship to people. They are individuals or groups who've been pushed to the outer edges of society because they're not important and they have a very low status. That's what marginalized means. Now, there are people in our culture today who make marginalized all about a race, correct? No. Marginalized is any person, any individual that others look down upon. Are you with me? Question to you, self. Who do you look down on? Who do you feel is not as important as who? You. There's always people in our lives, and we want to act like we're not all that. But you are. You're a human being living in America. You're amongst the wealthiest 5% of people on planet Earth. Every one of you are, if you've got a job. Okay? Is there certain groups of people that you look down upon just because you've got a house with 2.3 acres, you got a dog, a parakeet, and a couple of cars? You look down on and you see that they're struggling, and here's, you mutter this. Some of us will say it out loud, but generally you mutter it. You say, get a job. Work harder. Be like who? See, don't we compare people one to another, and especially we're the judge? Sure we do. We all do. Most of us kind of went through this in junior high and high school, where we actually would get our little gang together, and we had names for our gang or category, like we're the jocks. We're the motorheads. We're the musicians. We're whatever the group. But in every high school in America, there is a pecking order. And we learn to chastise people because you're not in my group. But then we become adults and we realize, ooh, I got to work for a living and I can't really say that face to face to people. So I just think it. Or I treat people that way during break table. Everybody in this room is guilty of treating certain groups of people or individuals as a marginalized person. They're not as good as who? You. That's what he's trying to teach his disciples. Because even the disciples, they weren't the richest people on the face of the earth, but they had a boat. They had nets. They had a job. They had a title. We are fishermen. And if you weren't a fisherman, you're somewhere in the pecking order of careers. Aren't our careers like that today? You're a doctor. Woo! You're up here. Okay? Well, you may not think much of them are lawyers, but do they make a little bit more than you? And in America, what determines our worth? Isn't it money and what you own? There's all, in our society, we're no different than what Jesus is trying to teach them. This is a marginalized person. We have words, not just categories for people. You see, I was a jock in Springfield. You look at me and you go, well, you must not have been very good. Hey, take me back 55 years, 57 years. Okay, I was a pretty good athlete. I was never a star athlete, but I was a good athlete. And I hung out with all the athletes. Remember Tim? Remember Rick? Now, me, Tim, and Rick, two guys I went to school with here, we were all in the athletic group. But even in the athletic group, there were people who thought they were better than the others. Tim, you played tennis. Rick, did you ever play tennis? I'm with Rick. I played football. We'd look at tennis players and say, Tim, you're a really nice guy, but tennis? But if Tim is a tennis player, he's looking at football people going, you're a bunch of knotheads. You know, all you are is muscle. You haven't got a brain in your head. Pretty good, Rick. That's us. Right? It wasn't a racket. Thanks, Rick. But see, we pigeonhole people. And when we pigeonhole people, they can never get out of that until we let them out. You see, I go to my class luncheon or breakfast every month, have done this, golly, 10 years maybe, something like that. And some of the kids who don't come that could, here's what they say, people never change. Same old cliques. What they've done in their mind is for the last 50 years, they haven't let go. All of us have a marginalized person that we look down upon. And the worst part is, if you look down on them, you probably are treating them a little different than normal people in your life. All right, look at verse 12 with me. This person was covered with leprosy. He's not a jock. He's not a motorhead. He's not a drama king or queen. He is a leper. In the pecking order of the Jewish system, if you were around a dead person or had touched a dead person, you were as low as you could go in the social order. Totally defiled. One notch above was a leper. That's how bad people saw lepers. Above lepers are prostitutes. Above prostitutes are tax collectors. That's how bad a leper was in that society. Now, if you were to read the Old Testament, Leviticus chapter 13 and 14, you would find out a lot about what the Jews, how the Jews viewed leprosy and what God told them about leprosy. Modern-day leprosy is called Hansen's disease. That's the official name. It is a bacterial infection that you could get much like a cold, either breathing on somebody. It wasn't the air. It's the moisture droplets, or a snotty nose, or being close to them for a prolonged period of time, you're ultimately going to what? Touch them. That's how Hansen's disease, a horrid, horrid disease, was spread throughout the ancient world. Now, here's the thing. They never discovered what caused leprosy until the mid-1800s. Now, think about that. Leprosy had existed for 2,500 years, and no one knew what caused it. It was a bacterial infection. Only in the year 1940s, in 1940 and 41, did they ever figure out how to treat it medically. So if you had leprosy for 2,500 years, there was no human treatment. Only, get this, in 1981, did they ever come up with a way to cure somebody with leprosy? So if you had leprosy, you were in bad shape, and nobody, no human could do anything what? For you. This helps us to understand the story with this guy coming to Jesus. Biblical leprosy is a catch-all. You ever hear of psoriasis or eczema? Is that how you pronounce it? Okay, skin disease, any type of skin disease outside of the normal skin fell into the category of leprosy because they weren't sure if your open sore or if your wound that wasn't healing well, could that be the real bad kind? So they just threw everybody into one bucket. So if you had a skin problem at all, guess what you were called? a leper. It was a horrible disease to have. In the Bible, leprosy pictures sin. It's not necessarily sin, but it pictures sin. How sin is a disruption of what is supposed to be holy and pure, and it's incurable. That's the way Jews saw it. That's why Leviticus 13, 14, two whole chapters, dealt with that. It pictures sin and a defiling of anything that God had made holy. You did not want to have that disease. You with me? That's what you've got to understand, how bad this guy is. And he doesn't just have a spot. What does verse 12 say? He's stinking covered with it, head to toe. Under biblical law, leprosy made a Jewish person both ritually and socially unclean. They could not worship God with anyone else, and they could not hang out with anyone else. Not even family, unless their family was also a leper. Old Testament laws required physical wholeness. And what God is trying, and remember, all disease, it doesn't matter if it's leprosy, if it's cancer, if it's common cold, all disease is the result of what in our world? Sin, bringing about the decay of a physical body that God created to be whole and pure. So it always pictured sin, of how it's, because no one could figure out leprosy. Where did it come from? Well, try to figure out why you sin or your child sins. Good luck, right? You just do, because that's who you are. And that's why having leprosy made you a leper. Just like if your acts of sin, you only have acts of sin because you are a sinner. Inwardly, you are. So it really was not the disease of choice that people would want. If you were a leper, you were required to take your clothes and rip them. So they're just hanging off from you. You were required to by the law. If you didn't obey, you got stoned. Why would they do that? So people knew what? Who you were. Okay, not only that, but you had to leave your hair unkempt. Now, for a lot of us, that's what's the difference, okay? Your hair's all messy. That means this, you'd never wash it. It'd be filled with dust and manure and whatever else you were around, sawdust. You didn't wash it. Your hair had, because they may not see your clothes, but if you're standing up, they'd see your hair was a total mess. And that wasn't the thing the Jewish people did. They kept themselves together very properly. You had to walk around like this. And if I saw somebody, I'm yelling at the top of my voice. Now, I didn't clamp my hand. I'd go, unclean! Unclean! Wouldn't you like to do that all the time at work? You were required to, or you get a stone in the forehead and you're killed. It's that simple. In biblical times, let me do this. This is going to be a normal person. I get to be the leper. In my mind, that's about 6 foot. I could get no closer to a normal human being than 6 foot. And if they were coming at me, I had to walk to the other side of the road. And you're yelling, unclean, unclean, the whole time. Is that going to make, what's your self-image at this point? That's pretty terrible. If, this is the Jewish, if that's a normal person, and the wind's coming this way, you got to figure out which way the wind's going, especially if you're a leper. I had to be 150 feet from anybody downwind. Now, did they measure it? No, but you learn 150 feet, sports people, is about what? 50 yards, half of a football field. So do you think you ever got next to a, we would say, a whole person? No. If you had a form of leprosy that wasn't a really bad kind, because in the really bad kind, it kills all the nerves. It doesn't, people say, well, it rots off your, it didn't rot off anything. You have no sensation in any of your extremities. So what people do, if you're working for a living, you would end up cutting a finger, it would get infected, and they would probably amputate. That's why the picture, you saw people like this. The worst part of leprosy is if you had the real bad kind, it would rot. It wouldn't, I hate to use the word rot, but it would look as though your face has rotted because all of the nerves in your face are dead. You have no sensation of pain. So if you bump into something, you pick up something hot, you wouldn't even, what? You wouldn't even know it. So a defining mark of people with leprosy is deformity, where they've hit themselves, they've cut themselves, it's gotten infected, it's grown funny, and with a lot of people in latter stages of leprosy, their whole nose caves in. Now just picture that. And see, that's a picture of sin, of how it very slowly begins to work in your life until it actually destroys your what? Your life. It's a slow process. So Jesus is preparing his team. How do you make a difference in the life of the marginalized? Socially, we all have lepers in our life. And some of you, when you went to school, maybe at work, you yourself were a leper. Everybody made fun of you. You weren't as intelligent. You weren't as socially gifted. You weren't as athletic as everybody else. And they poked fun at you, made fun of you, actually got beat up possibly, excluded from social functions. Can some of you relate to that? And here's the worst part. Some of you were at the high end and you treated those people just like that. That's Jesus is trying to teach us as Christians. How do we make a difference in the lives of those people? Remember when Jesus chose his disciples, he said this, I will make you. It means you can't do this on your own. I'm going to show you how to do it. I'm going to put you in situations where you actually have to do it. And then we're going to watch you go do this by yourself. Later, Jesus sent them two by two to go make a difference in the lives of people. So we're in Luke chapter 5, verse 12 and 13. When I looked at this, I have used this story. I've been in the ministry 53 years. I've used this story at least for 50 years to try to help church people, help teenagers, learn how to make a simple difference in the life of somebody else, and a spiritual difference, not just be a buddy to them. Be a buddy, but make a spiritual difference. For 50 years, I've taught this passage to people. So there's at least five areas that I have taught over the years. Here's the first. You want to make a difference in somebody's life who is a marginalized person, a social outcast, somebody who you would not naturally want to be around, and we're called to bring God into people's life. Here's the first thing. You ready to take notes? Luke chapter 5, verse 12, in the very first part of the verse. While Jesus was in one of the towns, we must make time for people. Simple. You have to make time for people if you're ever going to make a difference in their life. Nick talked last week about the fact that Jesus went to the seashore and in the guy's place of business, and he showed them what was required in order for them to continue growing in their spiritual life and learn to minister to other fishermen. And he read the words in Luke 5:11, so they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. Do you remember that? Okay. Jesus is now in one of the towns. There's over 200 towns, if you will, in this province of Galilee. 50 by 30 miles, okay? 50 by 30 miles. Not very big area. 200 towns. He's in one of them. It says, while Jesus was in one of the towns, he encounters a human being in need. Doesn't matter where you leave after church and what you do the rest of the week, you're going to be in a town somewhere. True? And here's what you've got to understand. There are people who have needs where you are, whether it's school, whether it's a workplace, whether it's your neighborhood. There are people who have needs. Some are small needs. Some are drastic needs, similar to what this guy has here. That simple principle, we have to make time for people. Jesus is there. The leper comes to him. Jesus and the boys didn't go to him. This guy came into the presence of Jesus. You will have people this week who will seek you out. It may not be that overt where they fall on their face or kneel before you, but they'll start talking about something that helps you to see that there's a need in their life. They'll talk about their marriage. They'll talk about their kids. They'll talk about retirement. Talk about health. Talk about the government. Whatever it is, they're going to tell you, I've got a need. And you can either look down on them, shun them, turn away from them, or you can be their friend or be there for them. Jesus, when he was, last week when Nick talked, it's a simple principle. We have to get out of our boats and get on a path where there's people. Our boats are our comfort zone. It's the things that we feel good about. And if you're a fisherman, you just didn't invite every Tom, Dick, and Harry into your boat. It was your boat, used for a certain purpose. All of us have a comfort zone, and what we've learned in America the last 50 years is this is my zone, you get your own. And America has really become almost antisocial, where we don't interact with people. Even in church, you're at your own little boat. Do you ever get out of your boat and go see somebody at another table for the purpose of getting to know them? That's what we're talking about. If you don't make time for people, you'll never have an opportunity to touch a life and make a spiritual difference in it. We have to reprioritize our life, our values, and realize this, that time is a tool. Time is a tool. And you either spiritually serve with that time in every area of your life, or you selfishly squander it on what makes you happy and makes you comfortable. It's either or. Which means wherever we are, any hour of the day, we should be thinking, God, is there somebody here that you want me to talk to? Is there somebody here that I could pray for? Is there somebody here I could be kind to? Is there somebody here where I could buy their coffee for them? Why? Because you're trying to show them that people do care in a society that is losing any sense of civility. Agree? So you have to make time for people, which means it can't be all about you all the time. Here's the second principle. We must think about the needs of others. In Luke 5, verse 12, the second part of verse 12, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. Now, he's covered. It's easy to observe this person. You can't always observe everybody and see their need like it's hanging off from them. But we have to, when we become aware of a need, Jesus saw this guy, we have to think about their need. Not, are you a leper and what kind of skin disorder do you have? Here's what we should be thinking. Dude, I wonder how long you've been a leper. This marriage that you're in that isn't going so well, I wonder if you've tried anything yet to bring this about. Your kids who maybe aren't living for the Lord, and I hear that, and I don't want to tell them what they should do. I want to feel empathy for that person and think about the pain that they're going through. Not just write them off. Here's a typical American response. Today, you'd never say this 30 years ago. Oh, you're going through a divorce. Sucks to be you. That's become the American response to so much. As we increasingly withdraw into ourselves, play with our toys and our game, we've almost ceased to care about other people, especially those who are the marginalized. Is that making sense to you? You've got to start caring for people. And you can't really find out much about people unless you begin to talk with them and ask good questions. Jesus was a master of asking great questions. And I'm always surprised how few people can really go any deeper than, hey, how's the Tigers? Or what's the weather like? Good questions are open-ended. They draw somebody else into your life and allow you the opportunity to speak into their life. It's a sharing of stories. So I put these words up here on the screen. Lisa's done this for me, I hope. Okay. How do we have a discussion with somebody when we want to find out if they have needs or not? hey, what plans do you have for this week? They've got to give you more than one word. And they say, well, we're going up north. Where up north? And then you can begin to ask and draw them into a relationship. Another word. What gives you or brings you great pleasure and a sense of accomplishment in your job? Are you with me? They actually have to talk now. They have to answer. If they don't, at least you gave them a chance to talk. And this is not about you telling them, giving your answers for these. It's actually you finding out something about another human being. And in doing so, you're going to find a need in their life that you could pray for. All of these questions will be in the online notes. Here's another one. How would you describe your pathway, your life journey up to this point? Like from birth to now, what are three or four words that would sum it up? You know what? A person has to think and they have to what? They have to talk. Another question I like asking people is this. What have been some of the problems in your life and how have you overcome them? People are going to have to reflect and then share and allow you to sense, are they dealing with a particular problem that I could maybe help them what? With or point them towards who? Towards God. Is it another one? Is there anything causing pain in your life right now? Could be health-wise, could be emotional, could be social. These are good questions, folks. Do you ever talk with anybody this way? Do you? We should. Number six, who are some of the key people that have left an imprint on your life? And what was it that they did? That's a great question. Last one, just another good question. Where is a place that you would like to spend some extended time? Well, it might be Hawaii. It could be Florida. It could be this. And you, at the end of the conversation, would go, you know what? One of the places I'm really looking forward to, it's not even on this earth. Oh, you want to go to space? Sort of. You see how that question leads you into a presenting of your testimony about Jesus? Folks, we have to learn to think deeper and talk different if we're ever going to make a difference in another human being's life. Why? Because our whole culture is caving in to isolation. Here's a third thing. When I look at this passage, it's the latter part of Luke 5 and verse 12. We have to display tenderness. Now, tenderness is not all being all ooey-gooey with people. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. You got to ask yourself, self, how would you respond? And would you feel the pain that this person is feeling to at least be that transparent? You know what? How hard it is for a man or a woman to say to friends, say to a pastor, say to a counselor, I think my marriage is over. I've got leprosy. Can you heal me? Do you want to? Will you help me is really what the person's saying. There's people like that everywhere. And to be that vulnerable, that transparent, we have to listen to their heart and have a heart and take the time to at least try to what? Help them in some capacity. This guy was aware of Jesus. He knew, heard about Jesus, may have been in a town, in this town where Jesus did a miracle. We don't know. He was aware of Jesus' reputation because he finally figured out there's nobody on planet Earth that can help me except this dude. And for somebody to come to you and admit something personal about their life, they're looking at you and they're inwardly crying, what? Help me. Because they've come to the point where they know they can't do it themselves. And if we don't have a tender heart at that point, they'll turn away from us. They'll actually, any chance of turning to God, they won't. I shared this one time, I think, in church in 53 years, I think. One of the things that brought me to God was when I was drinking heavy and doing drugs and just being a regular jerk, got into arguments at our party house. Remember the party house, Raider? And my girlfriend at the time said something very unkind to me, kind of like, you're a jerk. Really? Me? She said that, and I turned around. It's the only time in my life I ever hit a woman. Hit her right with a fist, right in the face, knocked her out. Now, I want to tell you, at that moment, I'm glad my mother wasn't there, because my mother would have killed me. Okay? I was petrified that I had really hurt her. I was instantly ashamed of having done something that I knew I should never have done. And because I had been raised Catholic, when you're in trouble, where do you go? It didn't matter that I was a drugger and I was an alcoholic and I hadn't been to church in 3 or 4 years. I immediately drove to St. Joe Catholic Church. I knew where the priest lived. It was late at night. Knocked on the door several times. I am crying. I'm sweating like crazy because I don't know what happened to the girl or not. Everybody was there taking care of her. He opened the door half asleep, and the priest did, and this is nothing against the Catholic Church in whole. He said, son, can I help you, son? I said, I think I just killed my girlfriend. He's trying to wake up, kind of like me most of the time, trying to wake up. And he says, why do you say that? I said, I hit her. And he said this, well, she's probably okay. He says, can you come back in the morning and see me? I wrote all religion off at that point. You see, having an insensitive heart to somebody's grief can cause them to walk away. I was at the lowest of lowest in my life at that point, and the person I thought would help me did not help me. And that drove me only to one other person, God. Now, we have to be tender. We have to be tender. That doesn't mean all ooey gooey and crying, but listen to the pain that the person is sharing to us. We can't help everyone, but we can what? Help someone. And Jesus helped a single person. And he's showing his boys, this is how you help people. You listen to them. You feel their pain. And you do what you can do at that moment. Fourth thing, when you look at this, Luke 5:13, you there? Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. Wow, we have to touch people's lives. Now, Jesus physically touched him. In the Bible, there are 9 people that we can see, 9 separate stories where Jesus reaches out his hand and, or his hands, and does what? He touches them. There's 2 words used for touch. 2 words used for touch. Come here, buddy. We're standing on the sidelines of a game. He's just standing there. We're yelling. We're cheering our teammates on. And we're kind of swaying around. And I just barely what? Touched him. That's one kind of touch, okay? The other kind of touch is this. Where I go to somebody and I put my hand on them or my hands on them. And I'm praying for them. I'm encouraging him. I want him to feel human touch. I want him to feel warmth. It means everything I've got, I'm given to you. Now, here's the thing. You never went near a leper. You understand that? You just did not do that in the culture. He's a rabbi. He's the last person that should violate that 6-foot space. He went to him because here's what Jews thought. If he touches me or I touch him, all of his leprosy comes to me. His sin comes to me. That ain't what happened in this story, folks. Jesus was not a recipient. He was a giver of holiness, a giver of cleanliness, a giver of wholeness to this man. And the man immediately was what? He was changed. But Jesus reached out of his comfort zone and touched him. The power of touch. There's so many studies. I've read at least 10 studies this week of just the physicalness to put your hand on somebody's shoulder, to shake hands, to knuckle bump. Physical touch does something for humanity that no medicine can do. It conveys love. It conveys concern. It conveys that I care. It conveys that I'm here for you. physical touch is huge if it's appropriate and it's in the right relationship. Now, he touched him, but you can touch people without being physical. You could buy a meal for somebody, couldn't you? You could help somebody with a task. There's so many ways that we can, in a manner of speaking, touch somebody's life that will make them a better person, that will open their lives up to kindness and the generosity and the goodness of God. But you got to leave your boat to get to where they are. You can't just sit in your own comfort zone. And Jesus, can you imagine the disciples watching him? Guy flops on the ground. Now, he's a leper. He's 6 feet away. That's as close as he can get. And Jesus is here. And the boys are going, which way's the wind? Okay? And Jesus does this. He approaches the guy. And the word for touch is, I am giving you everything I've got. Because I want to bring wholeness and holiness and healing into your life. Can you imagine the disciples going, does he want us to do that? The guy's got cooties. You know, that's the way we would think. He's got cooties. I'm not going anywhere near him. And I picture Jesus doing this. And God's doing this to you. There are broken people in our world. Get close to them and show them your concern. Show them God's love. And I think for a lot of us here, we're just like the disciples. We're backstepping. Let somebody else do it. Here's the fifth thing. Luke 15, the second half. Luke 5, verse 13, the second half of that verse, all the way through 16, which we're not dealing with, but the latter part of verse 13 we are. If you're willing, and Jesus said these words, I am willing. I am so glad that when I came to Jesus, I literally was broken. I was a total mess. And I didn't know if I could be saved. I didn't know if there really was a God, but I sure needed one. Have you ever been there? And when you hear those words, I am willing, it makes a change in your life to the person that's needy. Somebody cares. Somebody knows me. Somebody wants to help. Wow, that's a powerful sensation. And he says, be clean. Can you imagine the disciples as they're backing away? This guy's all white. He's covered with leprosy. And his fingers may have been nubs. His face may have been distorted. And all of a sudden, in a twinkling of an eye, not only is the white gone, it's all gone. He's whole. I don't know about you, but would that make a difference in your life if you saw a miracle? He saved you. Isn't that a big enough miracle for you to serve him? Wow. We must talk about spiritual truth with people. It's nice to help them. It's nice to buy them a meal and all of that stuff. But opportunities of need allow us to speak truth, the gospel, into their life and allows us to share our testimony with them. What they do with that is on them. Whether we do it or not, that's on us. I love this passage. 50 years I've taught this passage either from Luke or from Mark all around the world because I saw myself as a leper in my life. I needed something. There's nobody else that was going to pull me out of the pit I was in except God. And God said these words, I am willing. Wow. Father, for our people here today, may you continue to use us in your work. May we realize that all of us, we're kind of like the Jewish Pharisees at the time. We want to look down on people. We want to cast them aside. We want to give them the hand. And Father, you simply want us to go out and represent you in the lives of broken people. To stop playing the little social games where we're better than somebody else, but realize that everybody on planet Earth is broken in some area of their life. We can pray for them, we can be kind to them, but most of all, we could point them towards you. This week, let us do that. We all said, amen. So.